mindfulness mode.
Take each day at a time, and taking baby steps is really the best way, I think.
Hey, Mindful Tribe, welcome back to the show. Today, I'm interviewing a musician, and you know how much I enjoy that, being a musician myself. And he is a classical violinist. He began classical violin training at the age of, now get this, at the age of two years old. And by the time he was 13, he had already performed with the Buffalo Philharmonic. How cool is that? His expertise is in what's called transgenre improvisation. So we'll probably be talking about that on the interview. It's led him to a career as a soloist in demand, and he's performed at Madison Square Gardens, at Hammerstein Hall, Lincoln Center, and across four continents. He's been featured on PBS, and we're going to be talking about his music, his performance, and how mindfulness weaves in and out of all of that. So we're here today with Asher Laub. Asher, are you in mindfulness mode today?
I sure as heck am trying to be. It's a busy day.
Yeah.
Your presence is putting me in that mode.
Oh, well, I'm sure glad of that. What does mindfulness mean to you, Asher? When I say the word mindfulness, what comes to mind?
I think it's sort of contextual to the person. So when you run a crazy schedule like myself as an independent musician, mindfulness could be just stopping everything and doing yoga or tai chi, or it could also mean when you're in the moment where, you know, you have a lot of people staring at you on stage and stuff goes wrong, not flipping out, but, you know, finding your center and realizing, okay, it's maybe the situation that's stressful is not as big a deal as I think it is. And being cool in the moment.
Yeah.
Staying focused. So.
Well, you seem like a pretty cool guy. And when I saw some of the videos on YouTube, I was like amazed. Some of that Michael Jackson and the breakdancing you do with your neon. No, not neon. LED violin is. Have I got it right? LED violin.
Yeah, it's an LED violin. But you mentioned neon, which is my single, Neon Dreams. So okay. It's very relevant.
Right. Yeah, that's probably what I was thinking of. So yeah, tell me first of all about this transgenre improvisation. What does that mean, and how did you get into it?
Well, it's somewhat synonymous with crossover violinist. But transgenre is a little more accurate to performing, playing, producing across genres, such as Bollywood, Middle Eastern, popular mainstream music, classical, blending in hip hop, EDM, you name it. So that's sort of the reason for the name.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of and presented that way because it's really, I don't stick to one genre for a variety of reasons. I try to be as listener-centered as possible. I'm talking to an audience right now that's more interested in the singles that I would have released, that have released this past year, for instance, with Sirgun Kaur, who actually does meditation. Not as much into the hyped-up house music. So, yeah, hope that answers the question.
Well, it does answer the question, and I think it's really interesting because a lot of musicians do choose one, you know, country, rock, classical, or whatever, and then that's the one they work in. So why did you decide to do this, like to be in all these different areas?
Well, I've responded to listener requests, to client requests, to booking agent requests, and for some reason it's just sort of expanded my reach. I've always been interested in improvisation. I started out as a classically trained artist, so that's sort of at my core. But I've ventured out into, like, you know, like I mentioned, Bollywood, because there was such a love and appreciation for among South Asian expats, those types of groups, appreciation for the violin. So I sort of found my way in that direction, and same with Middle Eastern. So I've just sort of been exploring various genres and focusing on the genres that are sort of reflective of the passion that the listeners have.
Right.
And I focus a little less on the genres that are not as of interest.
Yeah, that makes sense.
In relation to the violin.
When you started at age two, did you start with the Suzuki method?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
I, I'm assuming you have some association with that. Not everybody knows Suzuki.
Yeah, no, not everybody. But I was a school music teacher and, you know, play piano and a bunch of other instruments and stuff. So, yeah, I'm familiar with Suzuki. And I think it's a great way to get started. Do you look back and think that same thing? Do you think it was a great way to get started?
I have mixed feelings. It's hard to know. Yeah. I'm grateful in retrospect that I did have formal training because it wouldn't have really given me the skills that I require today in a diverse type of independent musician type situation. I think bringing in a little improvisation at an earlier age would have been beneficial as well. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely grateful for Suzuki. It's definitely an innovative method that nothing really quite measured up to over the last 50 years.
Right. So. Yeah. You may never have become a musician and had it not been for that. Is that true?
Yeah, it's quite possible. Well, I wouldn't have been playing with orchestras at the age of, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, like very, very young ages, throughout my childhood and adolescence, if it weren't for Suzuki, because you're not able to really sight read at such a young age. You have to sort of play by ear and then learn mm-hmm. note by note and progress from book to book, as you know.
Yeah.
And that's something the Suzuki method, facilitates.
Yeah. Do you come from a musical family?
Yeah, pretty intensely. My aunt Sheila is the fourth chair in the Boston Symphony. Okay. Talk about her a lot. And my mother plays the UK. It's like a large guitar, but that's four strings.
Okay.
Father plays fiddle, and three other siblings play other instruments, flute, oboe, violin.
And what's that instrument called? Large guitar with four strings? I haven't heard of that.
She calls it a UK. She played just some strumming Beatles music,
Okay.
50s, 60s.
No, that's very interesting. So when was your first opportunity to play with an orchestra then? How old were you?
I started with the GBYSO, Greater Buffalo Youth String Orchestra, probably 7-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I was actually attending these like little baby, like age 4 or 5 type range at the University of Buffalo. I was attending these like summer Suzuki workshops.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess there was a little, actually, come to think of it, a little bit of fiddler music in there, but it was sight reading fiddler music. It wasn't improvising. That was it.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, that's really interesting. And so then when did you start improvising?
High school, like 10th, 11th grade, when I was looking at the jazz band and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
So I was the only guy who plugged in my instrument from the classical string section from the orchestra and got involved. I wish I had gotten involved a little more, but I didn't have the equipment so much. So,
well, I was going to say, most high school jazz bands don't have, violin in them.
Yeah. I don't know. That's one of my regrets, is not getting more involved with jazz band, but I was just busy schedule in high school.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. And so then you just started doing so much improvising and writing as well, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, but the writing began like the intensive production back here.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you, I'm assuming this is gonna be on YouTube or video format. This is like my studio. That started like 7 years ago. Okay. 20 years ago is when I started professionally like performing in New York and the Tri-State.
Okay. So you wrote music. Now tell me about the music that you've written for the meditative purposes. Did you write that music or did you improvise that music?
So I collaborated. So most notably, actually, the song with Porter Singer out west.
Mm-hmm.
She's near California. She wrote the lyrics to this piece that I originally was a song called Gratitude. So I wrote the melody and she wrote the lyrics.
Okay.
And that's actually on Spotify and all major platforms. Really an honor to work with somebody like her. She's known, her music is known in the meditative world.
Yeah. And what's her name again?
Porter Singer, originally Sirgun Kaur, Kaur, Kuer. Porter Singer is, yeah, her label transferred all of her music to the Porter Singer brand. So check her out, guys.
And did you write a whole album of music that was meditative then?
I did not. That's something I'm working on. I have a number of meditative songs that are out as singles, but I'm finding that there's greater interest in relaxing music.
Yeah.
So I guess probably within the year I'll have an album. Within a year, year and a half, I'll have a full album because I already have a bunch of singles that are meditative.
And what is your album of relaxing music? Tell us about that.
So I don't have an album of relaxed music. I have a lot of singles that are that are relaxation type songs, such as Subtle Pulse, Free Fall, Sea of Strings Meditation, literally a meditative song. Mm-hmm. Just holding it up so people can see.
Oh yeah.
And The Prayer is more or less, you know, the meditative area, Gratitude. So these are all singles that are
And
relaxing.
Where's the best way for us to find them? They're on Spotify, I imagine. Where else do we find them, or how do we find them?
Yeah, I'm on all major platforms, iTunes, Deezer, Amazon, YouTube, just whatever you could think of. You could also check out my music on astrolab.com, and there's a bunch of meditative songs there as well. And those are the best options.
Right.
I also post a bunch of relaxing music on social media.
Okay.
So I post almost daily, every other day or so, on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay. And so having gotten into this space of relaxing music and also meditative music, what has that done for you? Has it made you into a more mindful person? Do you practice mindfulness more, would you say?
Absolutely. It's become a necessity as, you know, you age. It's just something that everybody really should get involved with to be more productive in their day and so forth. I've always been interested in yoga and mindfulness. I'm going to give it like 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the music aspects, that's been more or less the last 2 years in terms of production and performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So do you meditate on a daily basis? Is that something you do?
So I'm actually, if we were to rewind to 8 years back, when I was diagnosed with adrenal insufficiency, I needed to pair just my different methods for just getting better with yoga and deep breathing, adrenal yoga exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And for instance, I would lie on my back and I would put my feet up against the wall, and I would find that would be tremendously relaxing and it would invigorate me. And that would sort of be a precursor to actually doing yoga, because since I was a child, I would get lightheaded very easily.
Oh.
So I find that adrenal yoga type methods and even Tai Chi are super beneficial for just giving me that energy that I need and increasing my blood pressure, which is generally the opposite of what most people tend to work towards, which is decreasing their blood pressure.
Yeah, I have low blood pressure myself. But can you tell us more about adrenal inefficiency? Because I haven't really heard of that before.
Yeah, adrenal insufficiency is basically an insufficient adrenal hormone production.
Okay.
And that's really something I've subclinically suffered from, knowing my own symptoms since a child, but they became exacerbated and grew into a medical emergency as I reached like my 20s, which is way too young. And I've had to manage it ever since very carefully. But if you're not producing enough cortisol, in my case, you tend towards, you know, dangerous levels of low blood pressure. That's something where yoga, Tai Chi, like the adrenal yoga has helped to sort of dilate the blood vessels, perfuse the blood and the cells. And that in conjunction with the right diet for somebody like myself has helped me to achieve a better state of balance.
How did you come to the point of being diagnosed with this? How did they figure it out?
Well, I had been doing saliva tests very expensive tests and medical treatment over a number of years. And prior to that, I was diagnosed actually with a chronic inflammatory condition by a neurologist at Mount Sinai Medical Center. So that was fun. And it was like 3-4 years later, at least, that it sort of exacerbated into this condition where I just wasn't, where I had these like inflammatory flare-ups that were mm-hmm. messing with my adrenal gland production. So I hope I'm answering the question. I was diagnosed by a neurologist, a primary care, an integrative physician, a physician who deals with basically with hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And I also happen to have a nursing degree from NYU, so that helps to know a little bit about myself.
Oh.
So medical background is pretty intense for me.
Oh, so that's interesting. You're a musician through and through, but you have a degree in nursing. So what prompted you to get into that field?
My medical condition.
So it was. I wondered if it was.
Yeah, I wanted to. I also have other degrees. You know, I have a science education background. I mean, I have all these doctors in my family. My father's a PhD. So medicine and biology has always been sort of at the forefront since I was in high school.
Oh, cool.
And music has been there since I was born. So the two were just sort of natural paths for me to take. Music is my absolute deepest passion. And the medical approach was, I think, more or less a practical direction in terms of like a day job, but mm-hmm. I've been doing music full time for 7 years now.
Yeah, I see. And you plan to continue doing it full time. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm producing symphonies every month, electronic music, relaxing, meditative music. It's my world.
Producing symphonies every month. And you say it so casually. I mean, this sounds like a really big deal. Can people subscribe to your music?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. You know, strings, horns, winds, percussion. Yes, people can subscribe to me on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, really anywhere you stream music, and can check out my, you know, I don't know if there's a subscription option on astrolab.com, but you could just stream my music there. That probably supports me the best.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Wow. So you must be just working hours every day.
Yeah. My wife calls me workaholic, which I am. That's where
so
the
you have time for a wife. That's interesting.
Well, it's two kids too. I have a beautiful 4-year-old and a 12-year-old.
So you're a dad.
I am a dad.
So what have your kids taught you about mindfulness?
Everything.
Yeah.
My son. We're trying to get him into yoga.
Yeah.
It's something that I think he would definitely benefit from. And my daughter, she loves like baby yoga.
Yeah. So your son is 12?
Yep. 12 and 4.
Yeah. And so how's he receiving this idea of getting into yoga? Does he think that's cool, or does he think that's something he doesn't want to do, or what?
So he has actually tried it with my wife. Mm-hmm. Like this past year, things got busy for him in school, and he plays basketball and hockey. So, but you know, we want to get him back into it. It's very, I think it's very beneficial. I think that everybody's kid, especially in North America, where mindfulness needs to be at the epicenter, I think everybody's kid could benefit. If it's just like part and parcel of their being, instead of it being this thing that we venture into when we need it most, like 20s, 30s, when we're being employed and the stress really emerges, I think that it should be built into the fabric of our society.
I totally agree with you. So both of your children sounds like really interesting. Your son is into sports, but what about music? Are either of them interested in music?
My 12-year-old play. He's taking formal classical piano lessons. He didn't love it for a number of years, so he sort of just dabbles on the side. My daughter's always, whenever I'm recording in the studio here, my daughter always comes out and says, "Daddy, I want to play violin," because she has a Suzuki instrument this large. So I try my best to kind of facilitate that. It's a little challenging. I'd like to get her formal lessons because she's so passionate about it.
Well,
But she's in
that's.
some of my videos if you want to check it out on Instagram.
Oh, is she? That's cool. On Instagram, we can see your daughter or hear your daughter.
Yeah, a couple of intermittent videos. I try to give her privacy, but she just loves to be in them. So I'm like, all right, here you are. World, here's my daughter.
Oh, that's really cool for you to have your daughter. Well, I mean, I have a son, so I know that it's cool to do things with him, and I imagine it is for you too. But tell me about some of the funniest gig performance experiences that you've ever had.
Funniest. I played a circus corporate event.
Oh,
It was
yeah.
pretty funny from my vantage point. I'm not sure how I belong there, but a bunch of clowns riding around on wheels and bikes and popping balloons. It was just like a total show. I'm trying to remember. Most of my performances are pretty like they're fun, not so much funny that I could think of. Although I do. I've had like streaks of posting like comedic music, so like music soundtracks to a bunch of goofballs that all sort of through a split screen. Those of you have checked out my social media posts, but the rest is sort of escaping me at the moment. Sorry.
I used to have a music agency, and I was hired to do gypsy music, and they wanted me to walk table to table at a dinner and I play the accordion. I said, well, yeah, I'll do this if you're sure you want me to do it. I'm not a gypsy, like I'm not trying to pass as something I'm not. But they were happy with it, so it was kind of a funny experience. But being a musician is one thing, but being an entrepreneur is totally different. Trying to make money, trying to make a business out of it. How do you manage that? And do you have a partner in business that helps you with this or what?
Yeah, so it's a challenge and it's a really good question what you asked because I've worked pretty hard to be independent. I originally I'm going to say for the first 10 years of my professional career in the tri-state and across actually the country, I was working exclusively with, I'm going to say like three different booking agents throughout the year. And I really tried to venture into my own direction because I wasn't playing the music that I was passionate about. So when I became a producer about 7 years ago, I took on the significant weight of managing myself. Since then, I've been sort of in talks with management, with like exclusive management, and it's sort of been brewing because it's just too much for me to handle. It's just too
I can
like
imagine.
managing myself is just like bo the bookings, the contracts, the negotiations back and forth. Really what I want to do is like spend 100% of my time in the studio and just doing shows. So I thought I could handle all myself, and I really am looking forward to working something out with some management that I've been
Yeah, I can
talking to.
imagine. You need a team behind you to do all this.
Yeah, and I've been sort of like the CEO of my team, but I haven't been able to completely depend on managing, my small team independently. It's just been it's a lot. It's wearing too many hats, really.
Well, the break dancing that you do, speaking of so many hats, that is incredible. Like, wow, you must be super fit and super talented to be able to do the break dancing on top of doing the music as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a challenge. And then you top that off with like my medical history, where I am at risk of low blood pressure and then like passing out on stage, which I've managed very, very carefully. I've never had that.
Oh, good.
I've never had that issue. But yeah, it requires a lot of prep, a lot of practice, a lot of mental prep also. And And I've been grateful for those experiences, for those, right. You know, on stage.
Well, I always ask a question about bullying because I've worked in that field for a long time. Do you have a story about bullying where mindfulness would have made a difference?
So I think way more people than we even know have a story about bullying.
Yeah.
And I've managed to probably wipe out of my memory any scenarios where I may have been bullied, and I've just sort of like kind of moved on in life. But I do distinctly remember a couple of situations where the individuals that bullied me in middle school, a couple of different situations, they would probably have denied it because they would have just stated it as, oh, we were just goofing off or having fun, but they didn't realize that it was like it hurt me, like, and it was yeah. It was hurtful, and they had done this to other people as well. And I mean this one situation that I was pushed up against the locker, actually. I think mm-hmm. It was like fourth grade, and I just sort of pretended like it was nothing. I just sort of brushed it off, and they laughed, and I just walked away, and I went to the bathroom, and I just like went to the stall. I just started crying. Mm-hmm. And it obviously took a major toll on me, because I remember it so many years later. I got over it, you know, after a few minutes, cause I just had to like move on and go to class, and I told on the kids. But yeah, I mean, those types of scenarios are very harmful, very hurtful to anybody. And I was fortunate to have grown up in a really loving family, and you know, with really good friends, best friends, and a good support system. But the myriad of people out there that don't have that and would have had a similar experience could have ended up doing anything like committing suicide. I mean, I was a teacher in the DOE for four years. Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctly teaching in middle school. There were new federal laws that came out that bullying was a federal crime. And I was just thrilled when it came out, because some, you know, people were just sort of laughing it off, like, really? Federal crime? But people were committing suicide at unbelievable rates, children.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, this should have been enacted 10, 20, 30 years ago, much, you know, in the 50s. And,
totally.
And it could have prevented a lot of harm, yeah. a lot of angst among families.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that sounds like a nasty situation you were up against. And do you think it was about jealousy or anger, or why do you think those kids did that to you? Did you ever have a sense?
I don't even think there was a rhyme or reason, because there was, you know, these were taller kids than me. Later on, we became friends. So I really just, I think they were just looking to get a kick out of bullying people in general. They were known to bully many, like a variety of other kids, just for no reason. So again, I didn't really take it so personally, but it did hurt at the time.
Yeah. Asher, I want to ask you, what's your next big performance that's coming up?
I'm always doing stuff. I'm always doing shows. Tonight I'm doing a private performance. I wouldn't say that's a big performance. It's more like a lucrative performance.
Yeah, sure.
Like like shows, like not-for-profit events. I'm doing a big production with Near and Far, up in Connecticut, with a team, with Fiddler's Dream Productions. And I'm very excited about that. We did that last year, and it's just like it's one of those events where it's like, it's not just about the music. It's also about the cause, and, you know, fundraising for people in need and for people who are starving. So that's what I'm doing. And, I try to do as many not-for-profit type fundraising events so that there's a connection to the music that is in fact meaningful. It's not just about the show. It's about making a difference in the world.
And so do you still do break dancing on a regular basis in your shows?
I do break dancing when the price is right, to be honest, because when I it was requested too often, let's just say.
Okay.
And I would show up to like a smaller event where it didn't really call for that type of hype. And so for that reason, I just sort of reserve it for, okay, I need four breakdancers around me for it to like work out.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise it's just, it really takes a toll.
I bet it does.
On somebody like myself.
Yeah. So. Oh, I bet it must be just grueling to do that. I mean, I've seen the videos. I'm like, holy, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. You break a sweat for sure.
For sure. I can tell.
I love it.
Yeah, I can tell. It's amazing. Well, as we move forward in the interview, I want to ask you five quick answer questions, Asher. So the first question is, who is one person who has been a really powerful influence in your life, like mindfulness influence, or it could be musical influence as well?
Well, I'm inspired by musicians like David Garrett in terms of like the musical aspects.
Yeah.
Herbie Hancock. I think most people know Herbie Hancock. He is a legendary jazz pianist and composer producer. I saw him at Carnegie Hall years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, and by the way, I think he just reached the age, I saw him on his 70th birthday, so he must be like 75 now, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He is a big time yoga connoisseur, if you will. Like he's also into meditation. So that's sort of been an inspiration to me. Like, oh, cool. Like this legendary Grammy Award winning musician who I really look up to musically and just in terms of everything that he represents. And then also somebody who's really into mindfulness and into meditation, into relaxation. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Porter Singer, who I've had the honor of collaborating with, which we just were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who has made music a career and also mindfulness at the epicenter of her life as well. So those are people I really have a lot of respect for. And there's a whole lot others out there as well.
Yeah, I want to ask you about your emotions and how mindfulness has helped you deal with your emotions differently.
Yeah, I've had a tremendous amount of stress at different points this year. And it's sort of a prerequisite to just functioning properly and to being productive. Otherwise, there's no other way to achieve whatever level of success unless you have that sort of built into your psyche, into your ability to just focus on the task at hand. It's, I don't know how else to say it. Some people just sort of do it intuitively. Some people don't need yoga or Tai Chi. Some people just have mindfulness sort of set in their brain so that when they're in stressful situations or when they're anticipating a stressful situation, their mind just sort of sticks to, okay, task at hand, not going to stress out. I'm not one of those people. I need those tools that we've been talking about. And music is also one of those tools to achieve and to stay focused and to stay strong up here.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask you about breathing. You touched on it. You mentioned it a little bit, but tell me about breathing and how some of these techniques have helped you to be more calm and more mindful and manage your health.
Yeah. Deep breathing, which is very challenging for me because I get lightheaded very easily. That's something that takes a lot of practice. And again, the right nutrition for the person. I'm, you know, not, I would never like prescribe like a certain nutritional, whatever recommendation for everybody. Just for me, I'm on a very specific high calorie type of nutritional diet that works in tandem with the deep breathing exercises that allow me to not pass out while I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The downward dog type movements are, I find are very helpful just to perfuse the frontal lobes and the adrenals and the thyroid. I find that those are very helpful and they go a long way. Just like a little goes a long way, as they say. You know, 5 minutes of that type of deep breathing, downward dog exercise can take care of me through 8 hours of a difficult, challenging day.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, are there any books that you would recommend that are related to mindfulness at all?
So I have not had the opportunity to read any meditative books recently, but I have had the chance to do the Adrenal Yoga podcasts, skills. So for instance, Dr. Michael Lamb, he's somebody that specifically focuses on adrenal yoga, and I've found that to be pretty helpful for somebody like myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been able to, like I mentioned, focus on any meditative books at the moment, but I would like to learn some skills so that I could spend a little more time improving my yoga routine.
Are there any apps that you use that help you?
Well, the Adrenal Yoga app is what I use at the moment. And there's mm-hmm. also, it's like a white noise type of app where
it's okay.
sort of paired with the deep breathing. So you mm-hmm. have certain sonic waves that are playing as you do the deep breathing and as you meditate. So, but the name escapes me. I don't even think about it. It's just on my iPad. So we'll
sure.
just play it.
Yeah, sure. So does that help you sleep, the white noise app, or is it for other times of the day?
Yeah, it helps us sleep. Well, we co-sleep actually with my daughter, so we also need that for her, so she doesn't wake up and somebody walks in or out of the house. It walks in or out of the room, and it helps us. Yeah, it helps us stay in a deeper sort of sleep. They say there's like different wavelengths that activate the sleep mode within mm-hmm. the brain.
Yeah.
So. Is it the beta waves? So.
Yeah, interesting.
Alpha waves.
Yeah. So what kinds of performances excite you the most? This isn't a 30-second answer, by the way, question. You know, it's just, I just thought I'd chat a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. I love the breakdancing performances with my dancers. I honestly miss that probably the most, like the big stages with the choreography. I get such a high out of that experience. I feel like it really just like augments the musical vibe. But I also just, it isn't even genre specific. It's just the audience. It's mm-hmm. it's audience specific. So if I'm playing a classical piece that is peaceful, but the audience is really into it, that's my favorite performance. If it's a high energy EDM, house song, and the audience is into it, that's my favorite performance. It's really just like, it's very audience centered. So.
Wow. When you go to compose music, and you said you write a symphony a month, do you ever get stuck? Do you ever feel like, oh, geez, it's just not coming? Or is it just flowing from you all the time, all these ideas and this inspiration?
Really all of the above. I mean, if you look at my most recent, Redemption, I'm just like, hold this up to the screen. Redemption is up there like on Spotify. Mm-hmm. That's a symphony with some electronic sounds. There's a bunch of pieces that you can see that are full symphonies. Redemption was not so easy to produce, but I was probably happiest with the product.
Mm-hmm.
When I do like a symphony cover, it's much quicker because I already know the melody.
Right.
Some of my sync licensing songs that are on my sync licensing page that's for film, those I put more heart and soul into, and I really, as a result, it takes a bit longer for me to find the melody that makes me happy, that I feel like, okay, I nailed it. So yeah, it takes time. But the melody, I would say fleshing out the melody is the biggest challenge. And then laying down the instrument is more like the busy work.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I already kind of know what to do. But laying down like 40 instruments is very time consuming. Yeah,
I bet it is. Wow. Yeah. Well, it's really been fascinating talking to you. I just am so inspired and really impressed with all the work you do and all the performances and your videos on YouTube and everything else. As we wrap up the interview, I'm just wondering if you have any final words of advice for anyone out there that's maybe kind of struggling with things. Maybe they're wondering how to get unstuck, or they're wondering how to move forward in life. Do you have any words of advice for anybody out there?
Yeah, so I'm not a meditation guru. I'm somebody who has needed meditation to thrive,
mm-hmm.
to feel good about myself and to feel happy, to feel joy. And that's somebody who professionally does something that is joyous. So, having said that, I it's easy to beat oneself up when they're in a, you know, a state of like, oh, you know, I didn't do my job right, or I had a bad interaction today with like my boss or my friend or my spouse. And you know, you sort of take each day at a time, and taking baby steps is really the best way, I think, the best strategic approach to achieving your goals. And that's coming from somebody who struggles on a daily basis, but has found that certain skills have worked over others. So that I'd recommend. And also finding something you really truly enjoy that makes you happy. Like, it shouldn't just be about paying the bills. It should be about, you know, to a certain degree, practicality within the finances, but also just finding something that like puts a smile on your face. There's just so many decades that a person can go through a job where it's like, okay, this again, this office job, this swear. Like, I'm making the money, but it's just like making me depressed. So that I think a person needs to be reflective upon. And yoga, meditation, Tai Chi, I can't recommend enough.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been involved in yoga and Tai Chi for quite a while. Is that true?
For a very, very long time, on and off. It's something that I need to find more time to do religiously.
Yeah.
But my wife does it every day.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
So she's probably an inspiration then, is she?
Yeah, we've sort of been swapping. You know, I've had like a year where I'm doing it all the time. She has a year where she's doing it all the time. This is her year.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, since you said this year has been kind of challenging for you in some ways.
Yeah, and I'm looking to do it a whole lot more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sure, interesting talking to you. And, you know, the topic and everything about your life fits right into this whole space of mindfulness. So thank you so much for being on Mindfulness Mode, Asher.
Oh, it's been an honor. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Thanks for having me.
All the best to you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Mindful Tribe. Thanks for joining us today. And I want to thank my sponsor, Athletic Greens. They have a product called AG1. And I can tell you that this is a terrific product. It contains 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source ingredients, and probiotics. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, this will work for you. It contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, no artificial ingredients. It supports better sleep and better alertness. Athletic Greens uses the best products based on the latest science, and it costs less than $3 a day. So here's a special offer for you, Mindful Tribe. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/mindfulness. And with that, take what we've learned today to reach new heights of calm, focus, and happiness. Stay in the mode.